from our studio in Houston, Texas,
it's time for the Angry Admins Podcast.
Hey, everybody, this is the Angry Admins Podcast. This is May 13th, 2008, and it is episode 70. I am one of your hosts, Ryan Necessary.
And as always, I'm here, Joe Bibby, working from remote location today at my house.
Yes, we're trying to Skype it up.
Yep. Wasn't able to get away from the house today, so we thought we'd show our dedication by recording over Skype. Yep.
Joe, why don't you take the first story and lead us in?
All right, so some interesting news this week. First thing I wanted to talk about is actually this old BSD bug. I don't know if you heard about this, Ryan, but this guy named Michael... No, I'm sorry. So there's a 25-year-old bug in the BSD kernel. And a guy named Mark Ballmer found the bug and determined that, you know, he had some old copies of BSD, and he looked all the way back and found that it was actually really, really old. And what's interesting about this to me is that it actually is part of BSD is the core that OS X is based on. So this bug is also in OS X. Apparently the fix is pretty simple, but it just goes to show you that, I mean, even Unix systems have bugs in them that can be very old and just take someone to find them.
Yeah, I read a little bit about this, and it was on in the, I guess, the directory libs. And I think based on when the bug first came about, there wasn't, I guess Unix wasn't as advanced as it is now.
Right.
And they were just kind of doing things the best way they could.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I don't know. It's... You wouldn't think a bug, you'd still find a bug that goes back that far, but...
That's a pretty old bug.
Yeah, that's just kind of the way it goes. I don't know.
Man. So, I got some news from Dell. Dell has decided that they're going to phase out their XPS line of gaming computers.
Really?
So this, yeah, this kind of sort of is more... evidence of the declining PC game market. And, you know, last year Dell acquired the Alienware line of computers. And I guess they're feeling like the XPS line is sort of cutting into the Alienware sales. So, I mean, again, we have the classic thing where a big computer maker starts competing with themselves.
Right.
So they decided they're going to take the XPS line out of the gaming section of their company. And just leave the Alienware there. So I don't know. They're gonna. The weird thing is, they're still gonna have XPS machines in the normal, I guess, business and home use section. So I don't know. This is one of those things that's bizarre. But
so the anyway. XPS is just not gonna be a gaming machine, essentially.
Yeah, it's not gonna be advertised as that anymore.
It'll just be their high-end home machine and business. Well, not even business. It's just. That's weird that it's still going to be around.
It'll just be on the. It'll be a high-end laptops and mainstream desktops.
That doesn't make any sense.
I don't know.
It's like, okay, we're competing with ourselves, and so we're not going to make this product anymore. Except we will.
Yeah, and then they also said that Alienware within their section is going to start doing a cheaper AMD-based. Box for gaming. So that's good news for folks that want to support AMD and save a few dollars.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, it seems like they just haven't done anything with the Alienware brand. You know, a lot of people thought they would just roll it into the XPS brand. And I don't know. I guess.
Yeah, we talked about that a while back, how the Alienware website didn't have any reference to Dell.
Yeah.
You know, how it's kind of funny.
Maybe this is the beginning of actually folding them into the main Dell brand.
Yeah, it could be. I think they want to keep them somewhat separate so that people will think it's more cool, but I don't know.
Well, yeah, that's Dell is constantly diluting, so it's good to see him kind of roll back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But E Ink, did you see this? E Ink is doing a new segmented display cell screen.
Hmm.
So what this looks like, so imagine, you know, like the old LCDs, like your watch, that had like the segments for each. So like I had all these bars for showing time, or like it would have a,
yeah, like the little specific blocks.
Yeah, almost like a, and then there would be other parts that had like a cutout for part of a display, like on your calculator, certain mm-hmm. symbols. So imagine that, but with E-Ink, where it gets turned on and then doesn't require power anymore.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's actually, it seems like a really good idea. I don't know why they haven't done this before. Maybe it was harder to do than they thought. But Delphi, which is an electronics company, has actually picked these up to use in key fobs. The you know, the little lock-unlock thing you have for your keychain?
Right.
They're going to use it for their new two-way key fobs. So you can see status of your car, like is your door ajar? Is it on? Is the air conditioning running? Fuel level? Is someone close to your vehicle? That kind of stuff.
And that's kind of cool.
Yeah. So, and it's a perfect thing for it because it's, you know, low power. So, you know, it's not going to be a huge battery drain.
Hmm. You think we'll ever see an E-Ink computer keyboard?
Hmm.
You know, we have the new crazy.
Yeah, the crazy expensive OLED.
Floptimus.
I think it will take color for that. Well, you know, it really would be a perfect fit, wouldn't it?
Well, I was just thinking if you inverted it so that it was all black with just a white.
Right.
Thing.
Which I think you can do that.
Yeah. I guess it's going to have to get a lot cheaper, but.
Well, the use for that, yeah, it would have to get cheaper, but it'd be a better use than the OLED because it doesn't require constant power, and it seems like the E-Ink is a little more sturdy. The OLED stuff just doesn't last.
Mm-hmm.
So like those, that new, what is it, the Optimus keyboard?
Yeah.
Supposedly it only lasts like a year, and then it starts to lose, the displays start to go out.
Great.
So you're spending like $5,000 for a keyboard and... Yeah, but I can see this being useful for like teaching language or something. Have a keyboard like flip letters on you or something. Yeah, I don't know.
Or if you have to swap back and forth. I was thinking like gaming.
Oh, like, that'd be perfect.
Like
gaming
application, you know, with your hotkeys. You know, gaming drives the industry. So it's not useful for gaming, it's not going to work.
It actually kind of does. I mean, people spend money, a lot more money for a game machine than they do for anything else.
Mm-hmm. So there's a story that I was following that was on Ars about the U.S. Air Force has a cyber warfare division, and they've decided that they want to build their own botnet with thousands of PCs for an offensive capability. So,
wow.
Yeah. They've decided that, you know, our enemies, that's air quotes around our enemies, mm-hmm. Our enemies already have this capability, so we should have it too, so that we could do a cyber warfare first strike and a preemptive strike and all this kind of stuff. So, yeah.
That's crazy.
And also they're going by the old military paradigm of, you know, if you're all defensive, you can't win that way. So,
right.
I don't know. But the question was asked, where are we going to get all these PCs?
Yeah.
And so they said, well, you know, there's a lot of old military and government computers that aren't doing anything. You know, they could easily be purposed in large warehouses all at one place to do this.
Huh.
How would you like to be that sysadmin? It's like,
seriously.
Your job is just to keep some old, junky, nasty, dusty PCs alive just to use as like a giant botnet. So that's really bizarre.
It just seems like a waste of resources.
Well, the other problem is that they would be using a lot of the tax-funded public infrastructure
right.
for these things to, like, do their thing and all this kind of stuff. So there was another related story that I don't have right in front of me, but they were talking about they wanted – the military wants some sort of like a virtual internet to do cyber warfare training and operations and bot attacks and practice all this type of stuff in a virtual environment. So they wanted to build like kind of like a fake internet to play around on. So it won't be long before we're having, you know, like War Games. I like the movie. Something bad happens to us all.
That'll be awesome.
Yeah. So your tax dollars at work.
That's right. Playing tic-tac-toe.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently citywide municipal Wi-Fi is just a total failure.
Well, it's been a failure. I mean, we keep bringing this up every couple months. It's like,
yeah.
Oh, no, a city has it. Oh, no, wait. No, they don't. Oh, wait. Someone's going to get it for free. Oh, wait. They reneged on the deal.
Yeah. So apparently Earthlink is the one who backed almost all of these deals. And then for some reason they realized that offering free internet access wasn't going to make them any money. So Philadelphia, which was like the biggest network to date, is about to be turned off on June 12th unless the city can find someone else to take it over, which apparently is not going to happen. So to me, this is like just the final nail in the coffin. You know, it sounds like a good idea, but no one wants to pay for it.
Mm.
And with broadband already lagging behind, it seems like we need to refocus our efforts on getting the telecoms to just get their infrastructure up instead of trying to compete with them.
Yeah, I was looking at Earthlink stock just now to see if they were even still alive. They're actually not doing bad. It's curious because I don't ever hear anyone talk about Earthlink anymore, but...
That's interesting. I think the only thing that's still going is the Google Earthlink combo in San Francisco.
Mm.
Which maybe that's part of the reason Earthlink is still alive, is they're getting a bunch of funding from Google. But we could see them make a comeback. You know, there's all this new spectrum that, you know, just got bought up by Verizon that's going to have to be opened up, and I think we may see Google combine more efforts with Earthlink if they've been happy with them, and kind of combine into some sort of new company. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Google buy Earthlink.
Well, it looks like every time they pull out on a Wi-Fi deal, their stock goes up. So maybe that's their new scheme for making money.
Yeah, make money by not losing money.
Yeah.
Yeah, apparently all these Wi-Fi things were just, it just didn't work. It was a lot more expensive than they thought it would be and a lot harder to do. And, you know, the cities put a certain amount into it, and Earthlink just didn't come up with their end because they weren't able to find a way to make a business out of it.
Well, I remember at least in one case, one of the cities didn't want to put anything in.
Right.
They wanted everything for free.
I think that was actually Houston.
Yeah, where we live.
Yeah. Yep.
That's all right. Me and Joe will just we'll start our own municipal Wi-Fi with Tropos.
That's right. That's right.
Pardon me while I go register HoustonWiFi.com. Somebody probably already has it.
Oh, that's funny. So we can't have another episode without talking about 3G iPhone, especially since, you know, it's May 13th, less than 1 month to go for the WWDC Steve Jobs keynote.
I've already decided if it does actually come out, and if one or both of us get the 3G iPhone, we're going to have to just have a separate pod, like a mini podcast just about that.
Yeah.
So that our listeners that don't care about it or are sick of it won't have to sit through it again.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
So what was the news?
Well, so AT&T leaked on their site. Apparently, when you chose an iPhone, when you select the model, for a while it said iPhone and iPhone Black.
Hmm.
So the rumor flying around is that they're... is going to be two versions, kind of like they did with the MacBooks, where there's a basic version and a premium version.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody really knows what that means. My suspicion is that it's going to be the difference between the 16 and the 32 gig.
Mm.
You know, because that's really the only big difference on the black MacBook. It was you got bigger hard drive and more RAM. So, you know, they're not going to change the processor in this guy. So maybe they'll get more RAM. Or maybe the black has GPS and the other one doesn't. I don't know. And then there were a lot of other stories. You know, you can find them if you want to. But there's, you know, more rumors about GPS, and there was some screenshots of an iPhone being able to turn on and off 3G.
Yeah, I saw that.
You know, we won't link to all those, but if you are interested, there's definitely lots more out there, and it's just getting more and more ridiculous as the closer we get to the I think it's June 9th is when the keynote is, which I will be out of town, so I don't know if it goes up for sale that day. I'm going to be driving to the closest AT&T store in Washington State.
Yeah, you're going to be in trouble because you'll be kind of in the middle of nowhere.
I know. I don't know what I'm going to do.
You'll just have to drive to Seattle.
I will. It's worth it. I will brave the drive.
Yeah. Okay, so we wanted to take a few minutes to talk about antivirus software. For the past, I want to say a few months, I've been trying out some of the latest and greatest from some of the major companies, kind of doing an eval on those and downloading their free trials, just because I needed a new antivirus software on my VistaBox, and I'd been a while since I'd read any of the reviews or checked any of them out. So I started with the latest from Symantec, and that was okay. Symantec is something that we use at work, and you know, it's got its own caveats and problems. It seems like all of these antivirus programs kind of have this thing where sometimes the updates fail, or if you want to get rid of it, it's really hard to get rid of it. And Symantec is definitely no exception to that. So it does have issues with that. It's pretty heavy on the install. Like, it takes up quite a bit of space when you install it. Maybe not compared to like a video game or something like that, but for antivirus programs, it comes in pretty big. The my trial for that timed out, so I dumped that. And I want to say it wasn't easy. I think I had to find a special uninstall tool to get rid of it that somebody had suggested on a website, like a public user website, where they kind of just offer free help for getting rid of Symantec products. So why do we have to use stuff like that? I don't know. But so the next thing I tried once I got that all cleaned out was Kaspersky, which was one that I had not tried before. And at Kaspersky.com, you can download their trial. They this is the antivirus client for the Ultra Paranoid, because this thing, it's pretty expensive, but it will update itself like literally like once a minute if you tell it to do that. So they release new virus definition signatures like multiple times per day.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's very crazy. The other thing about it is it's pretty, I would call it invasive. I'm running Vista on my PC, so I've already got potentially like UAC popping up every few minutes asking me, hey, are you sure you want to do this? I got that turned off. And then as soon as I loaded up Kaspersky, now Kaspersky is doing the same thing to me.
Oh, jeez.
Hey, Firefox is trying to answer the internet. You know, do you want to let that happen? So I had to back it off. And so that guy's pretty expensive and it kind of annoying. And it seemed really, like I say, invasive and kind of taking over my box a little bit too much. So when that trial timed out, I got rid of it. And finally went back to the last one that's still finished up the tail end of that trial is the McAfee. And McAfee, all of these guys have different like packages like home firewall and right. antivirus and email checking and site phishing checking. And most of the time, all I want is just AV because the other stuff I don't really need so much. But the McAfee, I got it and been pretty happy with it. Unlike the other products, McAfee does not have like a little annoying thing flashing down in the tool tray to tell me that, you know, you disabled the software firewall. And it's just like this little annoying thing going off that you can't turn it off.
Yeah,
McAfee does not do that to you. So the McAfee interface, I think, is pretty nice. The install is about half the size of the Symantec install. Some people say, oh, McAfee runs too many services and it's, you know, it's, takes up a lot of RAM and runs multiple processes, but I did the math on it and McAfee is only taking up about an eighth of the resources that my Firefox browser is. So, it's coming in less than Firefox. So I think I can let it stand. And if it's really a problem for you, you just need to man up and like build a new PC. So,
yeah, that's right.
But McAfee, it lets you turn off whatever pieces of it that you want. It doesn't pop up these little things and complain and gripe at you and have these little annoying flashing things. Kaspersky and Symantec, they both have like these little pop-up things that come up out of the toolbar and say, you know, your free trial is running out and you need to fix your stuff and download this and that. And, you know, whatever application I'm working on gets minimized and this other thing pops up. But McAfee, again, was the one that, you know, didn't screw me over. They just sent me a nice email that said, hey, by the way, this thing's going to time out. Feel free to click this link if you want to do the full deal. And I totally appreciated that because it wasn't invasive. It wasn't interrupting anything else I was trying to do. The interface was cool. And as far as like for just a general home user, it was very clear and concise. And it would show you, yes, you're protected from this. No, you're not protected from that. And I don't know, with the interface, the fact that it's a smaller install and that it doesn't annoy me, I think I'm probably going to stay with McAfee. Now, people will be wondering, what about the effectiveness of it versus viruses? Well, I don't know, because I don't get viruses.
Yeah.
So. And because I don't get viruses, I'm not going to judge it on the merits of that. But I am guaranteed to be annoyed by stuff like Symantec and Kaspersky. So
yeah, well, and the so when you're talking about the Symantec one, you're talking about the Norton product, right? Which is the consumer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that one, it just seems like it gets its teeth in. Like you're saying, you have to use a special tool to get it out. And
mm-hmm.
I've had people where they installed the Internet Security Suite, which mm-hmm. comes with the firewall and everything, where it like breaks everything. They tried to install Firefox and they couldn't get Firefox to even work. And
right. Well, I've had folks call me in to their office and say, you know, hey, I can't do anything. And, you know, I look down there and I see the Norton thing running, the whole mm-hmm. super internet, you know, ultra protection suite. And I just like uninstall that. And if you're lucky, everything starts to work again. If you're unlucky, it like breaks all your internet connections.
So. Well, that's how they secure you, right?
Right.
If you can't get to the internet, nothing gets through.
That's the ultimate phishing filter. So in my review, in my opinion, I'm going to be sticking with McAfee because it doesn't annoy me.
Nice.
So that's my take on that. All right, everybody. That's going to wrap up another awesome episode of the Angry Admins Podcast. For show notes and links to all the stuff we talked about this week, feel free to stop by angryadmins.com. You can leave your comments there or send us email at feedback@angryadmins.com. Until next week, I'm Ron Necessary.
And I'm Joe Bibby.
Stay angry. Stay angry.